Hey everyone, this is Made for Music. I am your host, Duncan Byerjean. The reason I started this podcast was growing up, music was my ultimate passion, but I didn't know how to get started. So this podcast seeks to depict a comprehensive view of the music world, from the artistry to the business, so you can discover the resources available to you, and most importantly, the stories behind the people making things happen. If you dig what you hear, please subscribe and rate Made for Music on iTunes or whatever your preferred podcast listening site is. I truly appreciate the extra effort. And without further ado, here is the next episode of Made for Music. Welcome to Made for Music. Today's friend of the podcast is an extremely talented singer-songwriter and trained jazz vocalist. In high school, he was in a touring vocal jazz choir and formed his first band, Futura, at age 17. His first recordings came out in 2014 with his friend and rapper Lucha Media, with his debut EP Adulthood following in 2015. And he's actually admits the rollout of his second solo EP, Easy, set for release March 4th. And he has a three-piece band he just started, The Coastals, that debuted early 2019. So hailing from Edmonds, Washington, please welcome child number 3 of 5, who delivers a shockingly amazing cover of Chris Brown's Yo, Excuse Me, Miss. A big fan of D'Angelo, Justin Timberlake, and the Neptunes, among many others, the walking jukebox himself, Evan DeVries.
Well, thanks so much for having me, man. That was quite the intro.
Yeah, it's my like one talent, writing intros to podcasts.
That was killer.
Thanks.
The third child of five. That was a nice touch.
Super minute details. Mm-hmm. I was texting you about that last night. You're probably like, "What the hell is this about?"
Yeah, it was like late at night, so you're like, "You're the third child." Yeah.
You're like, "Are you okay?"
Yeah.
I truly mean that walking jukebox comment, by the way. I know I told you after the show the other week, but y'all, he sounds like a recording when he's singing live. And I think anyone will attest to that. So
that's the that's like the jazz choir thing, man. Like,
yeah.
Our director at the time, he was just so honest about our pitch that like I'm almost like a little bit, you know, obsessive about it. Like, there can be singers that sound great, like their tone is excellent, but if they're like a little out of pitch, like it just, or out of tune, like it just gets me a little bit. So I, you know, that's drilled into me at this point.
Yeah. That's pretty intense. So that was at a pretty relatively early age too, right? And as far as your career is concerned, how did you get involved with music and then that jazz choir? Like, a lot of folks don't immediately jump into like a touring jazz choir.
Yeah. And like, for some reason, like the high school just had a really good program. So it was kind of like on our radar, you know? And to like answer your first question, I got started singing when I was pretty young. I think like the first time I ever got any positive recognition for singing, I was like in second grade.
Nice.
And we were in, you know, choir class, and we're trying out for solos. And there's this solo, and it's for a song about George Washington, right? And so, of course, I'm jumping up there, getting in the mix, and I was so nervous. Like, my face is flush, and everybody's, you know, you do it in front of the whole class, so it's pretty, you know, nerve-wracking and everything at the time. But I, you know, crushed the George Washington audition, got the solo, you know, and then you get really good feedback from that. So it just kind of cascaded. Sang throughout middle school. I picked up the trombone for a few years. And then by the time I was about to enter high school, my mom actually had like pushed me to audition for this jazz choir. And I was like a little bit hesitant, but I went and did the audition. And so, yeah, when I got in, and when I was 14, it was just, you know, three rehearsals a week and really rigorous. And you're singing with people of all ages throughout high school. And there's the full jazz combo playing along with you. And we would tour all over. We'd go to Oregon, we'd go to Canada, and this program just had a really good reputation, so it was like really good training for me. And then I didn't pick up guitar until I was about 16 or 17, and just kind of started making the music a little bit more my own.
Nice. So I guess, what does that entail as far as like that jazz choir? And you mentioned it's like really rigorous. What did you like learn during that time that kind of set you up? Because like you said, like, today you sound like a record. So how did, I guess, you get from square one of, I'm joining this choir, obviously you had singing experience, but what did that teach you in I guess, with little tidbits of feedback? Obviously, we can't give people a jazz choir lesson, but like, you know.
Yeah, here's how to arrange, you know, some vocal jazz.
Right.
But no, I think like a big one is just like blend. I mean, you're not always going to be singing with other people, but it's great to just be listening to the other musicians you're playing with. And especially in that setting, The chords are complex, so it's like if you're not in tune, something's not going to sit right. You know, if you're singing a weird extension chord and somebody's a little bit off, it's just, you know, it's not going to be good. So blend was a big one, and I think with that comes singing in tune, because you're just, yeah, you're listening and you're making sure you're fitting in and everything's locking together. And I think there was just like a kind of professionalism drilled into me, like kind of at that young age, which paid dividends later. And my director would always say something like, if you can't sing something like 10 times out of 10 times, like you don't know it. And that, like, even if it was 9 out of 10, like, he's just like, you don't know it. And that was like, that's pretty intense, you know, like that mantra. But it sure makes you like hit the practice room with a certain, you know, confidence, or you want to get to that level of confidence and you have like your goal. So I think between those two, just like the professionalism and blending and singing in tune, that's like what developed during that time.
Nice. Yeah, that's pretty intense. I know I don't sing 9 out of 10 times correct. Probably not even 5 out of 10.
Yeah.
So,
but, yeah, it's just something to aim for, I guess.
Yo, yeah, totally. So I guess rewinding a little bit. So, or I guess not necessarily rewinding, but you grew up here in Edmonds area, and then you went to, so after high school, you went to down to LA for school. Is that correct?
It was in Orange County. It was at Chapman University.
Oh, okay. Right on.
Yeah.
So with that journey, were you doing music down there as well when you kind of made that move?
I was, yeah. Like that's kind of, well, so I, like you mentioned in the intro, I had, Futura, the high school band. And so, at the time that was like a little difficult to leave behind, but it also allowed me to start like getting into production and like doing stuff as a solo artist. And I'd never really gigged just like me and a guitar before. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what like college was about a lot of the time. I'd be playing like, you know, art galleries or like farmers markets or whatever, the coffee shops around the city of Orange where Chapman's at, or just like gigs on campus, whatever I could get my hands on. And at the same time, I was like starting to get more into like electronic music, so I was picking stuff up on the laptop and learning production and just keeping up with music how I could without, you know, what I was familiar with, which was being in a band.
Mm-hmm. Have you found that those gigs at like at coffee shops and et cetera, like harder to win over than like a show? I feel like it's a very different dynamic, and I guess how do you approach that as far as like singer-songwriter in one of those settings versus like your gig?
Yeah, well, it feels like when you're at, say you're playing a brunch or say you're playing at like a coffee shop, like you're kind of just the ambiance at that point versus mm-hmm. like when it's your band and people are like excited to see you, they bought the ticket, it's like they're there and like they're into your music versus it's almost like hard kind of slipping into the background. You want to almost like let people come to you in that sense. Like you don't want to like go and start networking, you know, oh, what'd you guys think of the set? You know, it's like, they're just there to like work on their homework and have a coffee, you know? So, but I think those are still like valuable gigs, you know, anytime you Absolutely. Just can continue doing something and hone your chops that way. Yeah, I think that's, you know, it's worth the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And were you doing, I guess, shows on your own as well? Like you mentioned, you were kind of doing those like coffee shop gigs and wineries and whatnot. Did you also do like venue shows when you were in at Chapman?
Not so much until like the very end of college. And I was doing like kind of something interesting. Like I had a bass player, and I had a bunch of like backing tracks that I would like cue for different songs.
Oh, right on.
And so I would like layer that with my guitar and vocals. And that was pretty cool, but I don't know. It's not, I like having the full band sound as well. But it is fun to kind of get like clever when you're lacking a drummer or something like that. But I think I only did a couple of shows like that. And then it wasn't until moving to Los Angeles immediately after college that I started picking up with like the venue gigs and, you know, playing around Hollywood and doing that thing.
How did you pull that off actually? Cause I've seen, I myself have never done it, but I've seen folks that use like looping equipment, but that's obviously doing it fully live. Like what were you using to play those backing tracks and how did you, I guess, coordinate? Did you have like in-ears and stuff or how did that work?
No. So I was just going through the house. And I did bring like my laptop and a interface to connect to the main outs of the venue. But, I was using Ableton Live, which is the kind of the standard for that kind of thing. And they have like the, I can't remember what the main view of it is, but it basically sets it up. So you have a bunch of clips you can trigger.
Oh, cool.
And I have this like performance pad called the APC 40, and that's kind of nice because it's basically like your computer screen on like a hardware controller, like in the sense that it has all the clips that you can launch. So it's just like 40 squares or something like that, and each one represents, you know, your drums, your guitar, your key parts, background vocals, whatever you want to put in there. And then you also have like individual sliders for all the levels. So I was kind of just going off what I could hear from the monitors, but, and then I would just like basically break up the song into each section and just like launch it when it came around, which is a little difficult. And I think in hindsight, I would probably just like have the whole track mm-hmm. set out and like take out, you know, if the guitar, if I was playing it or whatever, and just set really like rig it up like that. But yeah, that was the setup, just like the laptop, Ableton Live, guitar, and yeah, the bass player.
That'll keep you on your toes, though.
Yeah, that's because true.
I feel like if you get too caught up in the moment and you miss a trigger, it's like,
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's the volatility is a little bit higher, you know, like you just accidentally hit the stop all tracks button, and it's like, oh, great, like that killed the mood.
Yeah. Play it in as like a sing-along part, just like, stop.
Yeah.
Point to the crowd.
You guys don't know this one?
But cool. And so then you mentioned afterwards, after chatting, you've moved to LA and how long were you there for? And I guess, or sorry, actually I want to back up a little bit. You mentioned Ableton Live and yeah. You're doing production. Is that what you're doing production in as well?
I use Ableton and Logic like in tandem.
Nice.
I usually start in Ableton just cause it's really quick and you can get all those loops going like I was talking about. And that's like a good method for me for writing if I didn't just like start on a guitar. And I just want to get some sounds down really quickly. And then I usually like bring it over to Logic because that's just better for me for like mixing and especially recording vocals. Like they have the comp feature, which like you can essentially just record as many takes as you want. You know, if the human jukebox isn't working as well as he'd like that day. And then you can just drag together the best pieces. And
right.
I like that more than, say, just hopefully getting, like, one really good take in Ableton or something like that. And I haven't edited as much in Ableton, so. But, yeah, I started learning production with Logic, picked up Ableton along the way for the live performance, and now I kind of just use them both.
Very cool. Yeah, I had never used Ableton firsthand until my EP, and it's crazy how great it is for arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
Like I didn't understand that because I have Pro Tools and I'm not great on the production side at all. So for me, I really do use it for arranging. But then when I started working with Aaron, it was crazy because we would arrange something and like, if I already had the song in my head and like I lay down the verse guitar, all of a sudden like 80% of the song, like if I could get the chorus and verse, it was like, boom, we've mapped the song.
Yeah. Oh my God.
This would have taken me an hour if I was trying to get it right. So yeah, I've found that to be a huge tool as far as, like you said, like songwriting and just how easy it is to just drag sections and.
Oh, totally.
It's incredible.
Yeah. And like, you can just record, like if you have, like you were saying, like your chorus chunk and your verse chunk, like you can just record those all into the session view, I think, you know, mm-hmm. and that's like the timeline that everyone's used to seeing in other digital audio workstations. And yeah, just the fact that you can, you know, just hit this chunk once, hit the chorus chunk, and then hit the verse chunk again. It does feel like you have like the song pretty much done.
Yeah.
It's super nice. And there's also just like a lot of like synthesis benefits to Ableton too. People go crazy with like Simpler and Sampler, like, just drop in whatever source material you want. You know, like I made a track because I make like hip hop beats sometimes just for kicks. And so I had this like group that I was running on Facebook, and basically I invited all the musicians I knew that make beats and stuff. And one of the challenges that I like issued for one of the weeks was to just go out and record like a bunch of field samples, like, you know, go throw some rocks at some metal or something and like get that, even if you're just recording on your iPhone, you know, like voice memo or whatever. And then just drop it into Simpler or Sampler, you know, chop up a bit you like, throw some effects on it, see what you can come up with. That was like a super fun challenge, and it's so easy in Ableton. Like, it's just amazing what you can do with like any source material. You can get some cool results.
Yeah, that's always fascinating to me when you hear like weird sounds. Like, how was that? And someone's like, crushed a water bottle.
Yeah.
Like, what? And it's like this big beat or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's crazy. I mean, especially with effects processing, you can just go, you know, sky's the limit.
Yeah. And it, you mentioned making hip hop beats for fun, and your first EP has a little bit of hip hop.
Yeah.
Is that correct to say?
Yeah, you're like, right. I was rapping on there.
Yeah. So, I guess, was that around the time that you'd moved to LA, or was that college, or what was that transition like, and what kind of brought you from jazz to hip hop?
That's a good question. Yeah, so I think like the jazzy influence is there in the melodies, but yeah, I was just listening to like a bunch of hip hop. I think it was just kind of what my friends were listening to at the time. And then just started like diving into it a little bit more myself. And I was making that music like towards the end of college. And I wrapped it up when I was doing a study abroad semester in the Czech Republic. And so I was like mixing on my headphones and this flat there, and, you know, set up a vocal booth in my like, what's it called? Like closet or whatever, essentially, you know? And, yeah, I was just listening to a bunch of random stuff there, so it's definitely much different than the sound I have now. Like, there's like a little bit of like dance music influence. Like, I was listening to a bunch of like Beat Connection. Those are like, that's a local kind of dancey band here from Seattle, and yeah. So it was kind of an interesting blend, but I feel like I've kind of gotten back towards like the soul and like jazz that I, you know, I got more into soul because of D'Angelo, but like I kind of got back towards those styles of music, and I don't plan on like rapping anymore. We can make that known.
But now you can at least say it. Yeah, I started off my career as a rapper, but yeah. now I'm a jazz soul singer.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Just, yeah, cut my losses there.
Would you say that being in Europe influenced that? Because they definitely have a lot more like of an influence, or I should say a lot more of an emphasis on like electronic music. Did that play into it, or was it just kind of happy accident that that's when those records came out?
Maybe subconsciously a little bit. Like, there definitely was like a fair amount of like going out and listening to club music and stuff, and I enjoyed that at the time like a lot, because they just had some bizarre bars there, man. Like, there was this like steampunk place that was like, I felt like I was in the Matrix for some reason, because there was all these like gears turning around me, and like I don't even know, man. It was just one of the funniest places I've been. But yeah, they were playing some like heavy dance music and a lot of like, I think like future house is the genre, and it just feels like engines are revving at you or something like that. It's really in your face, but I wouldn't say I like went that far into like the like EDM realm, but it's just like enough to kind of have like an electronic influence, and try to like work with some like faster tempos, which isn't what I do at all anymore. Like I'm very comfortable in like the like slower, groovy, like lower BPM stuff now. But I still enjoy that music just for casual listening or whatever.
Totally. So with that, you know, you're traveling abroad and you came back, and then after school, you went to like LA and whatnot. And of course now you're back here. So what would you say like Seattle folks could learn from the LA scene, or I guess what did you learn from the LA scene that you apply up here?
That's a good question. I mean, so I was there for about 2 years, which I feel like is like kind of just enough to get your feet wet a little bit. I mean, some of the benefits for being there are just like, it seems like everybody's kind of doing it. So there's like something very like encouraging about that. And also like, it's like a double-edged sword, because it's like, it's great to meet like musicians on the regular, and like, you know, there's a lot of opportunity. Industry is obviously very like centered there amongst other places. So it's cool. And like one of my like first experiences was meeting this guy like randomly. He worked at like this I don't know, they served some sort of, it was like Cuban food or something, but they also had jazz at nights. And so I bump into this guy after I like was just doing a job interview, and like we get to chatting. I tell him I do music, we swap cards and everything, and then I have a phone conversation with him a few days later, and he's like got this like laundry list of cool accomplishments. He's like, I've toured with the Black Eyed Peas, you know, like produced for so and so, and I used to be signed to like this sweet record label that I love, Stone's Throw. And so it was just, I feel like my mind was blown. So I don't know if there's something to learn from that, but I guess if you want to be around people with that kind of like list of accomplishments, it's good to go to a city like that. I think something that I prefer about Seattle is like, it does seem like people are like a little more like straight up with you. because there's a lot of like the yes man game in LA. It's like, oh, totally, man, let's jam. Yeah, let's get together and jam. And I'm just like, I'm not going to be like, yeah, totally, because it just doesn't feel like there's any like weight behind what you're saying.
Right.
You know, and not to bash on all of LA, there's plenty of good people there. There's good people everywhere. But that was a bit of my experience that I feel like, I don't know, it just kind of tainted things a little bit for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think, though, if there's any like really good concrete thing. I mean, it's just like the you know, dedication that people have out there, too. Like, there's always going to be like a jam going on. There's always a cool concert to go see and get yourself ingrained with people a little bit more. And yeah, it's just a creative, fun place. Like, you can talk to your Uber driver and, you know, their side hustle is writing a script, or, you know, they have a show they'll tell you about. And it's fun to connect with people in that way. So I guess just getting out and going to do things is something that you can bring that energy here too.
Yeah. I feel like that's starting here on a much smaller scale with like Park Ave and stuff like that. Musicians are actively going out and trying to meet each other. But I feel like prior it was pretty like segregated into like genre almost, of like singer songwriters hang out with the songwriters, the rappers are with the rappers, and then the bands are over here. And even that's like split up of, okay, if you're a rock band, you're a heavy metal band, you're a blues band, like it didn't all come together.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's starting. I could be totally wrong, but yeah, it feels like it's starting to mesh a little bit more.
I think you're totally right, dude. And like a lot of credit to Park Ave. Like,
yeah,
that was super encouraging when I just moved back from LA. 'Cause it was like, maybe, you know, Park Ave was 4 months old or something at the time, something like that. And I thought it was great, dude. Like, there, I didn't find something like that in LA where it really felt like somebody was making like a concerted effort to get people together. And like, and I remember like Scarlett was basically like laying down the ground rules for the jam. And she's just like, check your ego at the door and just, you know, don't be critical of everybody else. Like, we're just here to have fun. Like, anyone can hop up. And I thought that was really cool and like welcoming. And heck, that's how we met too. Yeah. So it was like the fact that I've met people, not just in like the networking sense where you're like trying to get something from each other, but like actually have like friends from that is like exciting. That's cool.
Absolutely. And that was what was crazy, is like looking back to when we first met, it just how people have started working together too. Like, I think I met Tyler Mays there as well. Like, I met you, Tyler, and obviously I knew Aaron Art. And then I'm talking to Tyler about like recording drums at his studio. Yeah. And then we played shows together, and then Aaron's kind of making his way on the production side. So it is cool. And like you mentioned, it's not just like, oh, we should do something sometime. All right, cool. And then see him 6 months later and, hey, we should do something sometime.
Yeah, you know? Here's my card again.
Yeah, exactly. In case you lost it.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's good stuff. So I guess now that you're back here, I guess, what do you kind of see for yourself? You're getting ready to roll out this EP,
yeah,
which is really cool. And you noted that you kind of moved back to the jazz soul style. So did you have a distinct approach to writing this EP, or is it just kind of naturally came to you, mix of both, like this project easy? Do you mind telling me a little bit about it?
For sure, man. Yeah. And I'm excited to dive into like the marketing stuff a little bit more too. But originally, so some of these songs are old, man. I remember like, I think one of these songs I wrote when I was like a sophomore in college, and I would play it for people. Like, we would be having like a get together or whatever, and I'd bring people like into my back room because I'd had a few beers, and I was like at that point where I was like, oh, I gotta play a song for somebody, you know. And I remember playing this one. It's called New Perspective. It's the first song off the EP, and I always got like a really good reaction. But I've been trying to get it down like since, like it's gone through every iteration you could imagine. Like, all right, let's take it up tempo, let's try it reggae, let's try it whatever, and I just like could not get it right for some reason. And so I had a couple of songs like this just in my back pocket that had been through a lot of versions. And I think what really helped solidify it though for me was I had something in mind, but then taking it out to like the live arena, not playing arenas, but you know what I mean. And I had a really good group of guys down there. A key player named Jasper Burek, bass player Alex Rushka, and my drummer, Trevor Carlson. And I think just having everything arranged, knowing what I wanted vocally, but just like getting the feel down and getting like the grooves really locked in with people who knew what they were doing on their instruments was key. So I think it was like, I wish I could be like, man, it was like super tight knit. You know, I wrote for 3 months and then I went into production and I knew exactly what I wanted, but it was a mess, dude. This took me a long time. I wish this was done earlier, and I originally thought it was going to be an album. But that was a bit overzealous. I was just, bit off more than I could chew. And I whittled it down to the songs I really wanted to include. And just recorded bits and pieces here. I was recording at the place I was living in Los Angeles, going over and getting keys with my guy Jasper, laying down bass, just wherever, and I ended up finalizing it back here. And I had a buddy, Aaron, mix a couple of them. And then I also had a guy that I had met named Michael mix a couple, and he lives down in Florida.
So right on.
A couple people did the mixing. But yeah, they Aaron did a really good job of listening to what Michael had done and kind of keeping the palette the same. So it's pretty cohesive across the board, but yeah, all in all, kind of a sloppy approach. And I think, but there's learnings in that, right? You go make a big mess and now you can kind of reflect on that. And I think the next project will be a lot more streamlined.
Yeah. I feel like that's how it goes. I even, for projects I've done, the band stuff that I'm doing right now, some songs are 10 years old that we actually have released recordings before that were just really bad. And we're like, no, this is a good song, really bad recording. Let's revamp it. But, what I was going to say is having had a sneak peek and listening to the EP, it's definitely a cohesive work. You listen through the whole thing. There's variation, obviously, but it's really cool what you put together because you listen to it and you're oh, this is Evan's sound. You know what I mean? Can evolve. And I listen to the old stuff too. And it's there's still a glue that holds it all together sort of thing. And I think it's probably that jazz soul, vocal style. I think does a great job, but the record's really, really good. So,
dude, thank you. Yeah. And that's the best thing you can hear, right? It's you're allowed to change, but it feels it's still your music, whatever you're taking on. Say Childish Gambino or something like that. It's releasing that, basically 70s funk record out and being I'm not going to rap on this at all. When that's what he was totally known for. And, he DJs on the side too. Anyway, I could go on about that guy, but it's just amazing that you can have the freedom to change like that and kind of still sound like you.
Yeah, from Redbone to This Is America.
Yeah.
To This Is the Internet. Is that what it was?
Oh, Because of the Internet.
Because of the Internet. Any song from any of those, well, I guess Redbone and obviously This Is America are tracks, but compare those to, Because of the Internet and 100%. But yeah, nobody is I don't know. It's not Childish Gambino. I mean, some people obviously have their preferences, but
yeah,
it's pretty crazy. And I honestly think that the streaming climate allows folks to do that. It's not necessarily, it's a catch-22 of you could just do the album route and every two, three years put something out and people are gonna have expectations. But if you keep just dropping music and it changes, people can't blame you. You know what I mean?
Totally.
For changing.
Yeah, and people digest things really quickly now. I have some albums in rotation that I've been listening to a lot for a long time. I don't know, Tame Impala, Currents. I always come back to that every couple of months. I just love that album. But I think by and large, it almost feels like the music itself is more of a commodity these days because people have unlimited supply. It's not just all right, I have my 10 CDs in my car. And I'm going to, wear these guys down, until they're skipping or whatever. I think that that environment is what's created me to try to do something a little different with the EP. Mm-hmm. Because I wanted it to be more valuable and lasting in the minds of the people who engage with it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I've set up this whole online experience that I'm calling it. And, I'm just trying to create a world for people to dive into more than just the play button on Spotify.
Right.
And I think if you can create that sense of this is cool. If it's the equivalent of binge watching something, there's a lot of content out there. You do a great job of consistently posting and
thank you.
Got the podcast going. You're creating something that people could really, really engage with if they become your big fan, and that's there for them. And I think that's kind of the difference in what artists need to strive for if they don't just want to be another person in the Spotify shuffle or Pandora shuffle.
Hey, there you go. So I do want to jump into the marketing, but it's funny you mentioned, you know, Pandora and working there. How has like working in the music business like shaped your perspective of it?
That's a good question. Well, I mean, it's kind of cool because like I'm working in advertising, so mm-hmm. it's like for Pandora. So it's like I kind of get to see like two critical aspects to the business, you know, like the how people are advertising, and like learn a little bit more about my best practice and like sharpen my skills there compared to like what we offer people that want to advertise on Pandora mm-hmm. and like learn from that. But then also it is cool just like being at a company that's really centered around music. And like my day-to-day involvement isn't like super music heavy.
Right.
But it is kind of cool to occasionally get exposure to like, I was sitting in on some like planning meetings for like Cardi B's throwing a giant concert in LA. And like, so it's funny just to see people at like the top like level, like they're funny riders, you know, and demands and like the stage lights that cost like $60,000 and they can't do it without that light, you know, and it's just like, so I guess there's like a little bit of peering into that world. And quite honestly, like my approach is not, I don't really want to be like in the industry per se, not to say I wouldn't want to benefit from some of the things in the industry, but like I want to stay independent. Like that's the dream, you know, and like building something yourself, like an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. So it is good to like understand what's going on with like the big beast of the music industry, but also kind of like knowing that I want to stick on my like independent route too.
Yeah. Well, I think you've done a great job, because I think one thing too is the difference between independent and, you know, major label kind of thing is, major label to me, what it's become is a set of services. It's no longer the gateway to success. It's, you know, now it's basically a managed service. Like, okay, you don't want to be responsible for, you know, getting the engineers lined up and the marketing and all the budget stuff. Like, we'll take care of that. You focus on, you know, interviews and performance, etc.
Yeah.
But the independent route is, like you said, like being an entrepreneur and building it. So one thing that I think is really cool is you've learned and developed a rollout that speaks to like what you were saying of it needs to be more engaging and building content. So in would love, you know, to dive a little bit deeper, is you've kind of got this online experience that people could sign up for and really experience the EP in a more holistic manner with like videos about each song and diving in, and then also get it early as well. You can listen to the EP before it drops on, you know, all the major distribution platforms.
Exactly.
So I guess you kind of talked about wanting to build a world, but what, like, how long did it take you to plan this? And what was that like trying to build this and say, okay, here's how I'm going to roll this thing out?
Well, I think it's been like something I've been planning for about over like a year. And some people will do like a similar strategy or like marketing plan, or rollout, whatever you want to call it, with like full album. So like, that's like, you know, over twice the amount of content. And I think like similarly to my like writing and production process, it could have been like a little bit more streamlined. Like, all right, I'm going to sit down and just like have a couple of outfits and like record all the daily like vlog explanations of what the song means to me and like how I created it. Like that could have been a little more streamlined. And then also like a component of just like learning, like it's really reliant on like the Facebook ads platform.
Yeah.
And there's like a lot of tech, learning curve that was happening. Like I run my website through this thing called ClickFunnels, which is,
oh, I'm not familiar.
It's really handy, 'cause it's like a drag and drop, like funnel builder. And you basically just get like your steps. So like I have my like landing page, which is basically just like me explaining the offer and then a button to sign up if you want. And like that type of like squeeze page was invented just to give people like kind of an action that they have to respond to. And like when you land, it's pretty much either yes or no, you know, like maybe you'll come back later, but that like decision is like forced on somebody, which mm-hmm. is like, that's a pretty good tactic in marketing, 'cause it just is much more clear. Like they're not going to go click away to your music videos or something. Like it's like, here's what I want you to do. Like, do it or not, kind of, you know,
right?
Like,
yeah.
But then like the other pages in the funnel that you can set up later are like your content pages, you know, explaining each song, and then you also have like your order pages and like thank yous along with all those. But later in the experience, the plan is to like offer, like I printed some limited edition CDs, so I like have that as like sort of like the token of, you know, representing the experience if you feel so inclined. And so there's like all this like kind of engagement and like nurturing going on with the people who decide to sign up, like letting them into your life a little bit, explaining things, and actually like trying to be like the type of person that they can just like talk to, right? Like, I'm not trying to be like, you're my fan, like I'm the cool artist. It's like, no, if you shoot me a message or like reply to my email, like I'm gonna write you back and like tell me about you. Like, one of my like pre-launch emails, because I do like about 10 emails leading up to it, as you've seen, it's basically just asking like, tell me about like what you do creatively. Like, is it cooking? Like, do you paint? Like, what do you like to do? And like, I'm interested, because like these people are making an investment in me, and like I want to do the same. Like, I don't want it to be like a non-reciprocal, like, do what I say. Like, so you got to like keep that like, reciprocity and build up the goodwill with your audience in that way too.
Definitely, and it's really fascinating because what you're doing, you literally are talking about like virtual, but manifestation of the marketing funnel.
That's exactly
it. All the way through. And with like social media era, it's completely flipped. Like you said, it used to be a one-way street. Like when the record label owned all, it was you go to the record label, you record, and then one-way street out, they control the message to people, and there's no like feedback loop.
Yeah.
And like you said, now you've got the people who are investing, and you have the opportunity to build that community and make it a two-way street, which I think is really important too. And that's, especially in the now era, that's how you get people to hold on a minute.
Definitely. Like, yeah. And like, well, yeah, I mean, you're nailing it on all fronts. Like it's exactly that. It's like the marketing funnel. Like, I ran a bunch of traffic at the top on a video, which, just to get as many people, well, it was like a targeted audience, you know, like basically the methodology is like, choose like 14 bands that you think sound like you, and build a bunch of audiences on Facebook, along with like, you basically just build all these custom audiences on Facebook, and then that your video gets shown to a bunch of people. That's kind of like their way of discovering you and like finding new fans. And then by the end, when I'm making my offer, it's just like whittling down the amount of people. So I only show kind of like the next step to people who have like watched 50% of the video, or, you know, have commented on my Instagram in the last year or something. You know, you whittle it down to like, you finally qualify maybe like 10% of the people who actually signed up for this thing to purchase something. Like, that's the usual like conversion rate for buying something that you want to aim for. And this is not like, I'll be totally transparent. Like, it's not like perfect. Like, I have learnings. Like, I'm going to probably run more videos up front so people can really like, I can like welcome them and actually get to, they can like recognize me. Because I feel like I was reliant on like one video, and that's not like enough for people to like recall you necessarily.
Right.
So like, there's things I've learned, but I think I'm gonna like stick with this strategy moving forward, because it's just fun to like build that. And also, I'd like, to your point about like the two-way communication with social media, I saw this like crazy clip of David Bowie, and I think he's in like the early 2000s, and he's basically says something like the reporter's all skeptical about what he's saying too, but he's like saying, I predict that like in the future, like the vast majority of what we're watching is going to be about like the moment before the release. Like, he's like 80%, you know, like,
wow,
will be about that. Like, right now it's all about, here it is. Like, here's the final product, like, go. But he is like calling it like the future of social media and how we engage it. And now we want the behind the scenes. Like, we want the candid stuff. We want all the, you know, stuff that makes people appear like a little more human.
Yeah, it's crazy. That's like the most, you're totally right. Like, I experienced that when we did behind the scenes stuff, but we didn't prepare really for that. And now there's a lot of like, well, like seeing other artists do it, like what your rollout is very cool and engaging. And I think people are going to continue to talk about it. And like, I think Scarlett posted something too, where it was something like the caption was something along the lines of, apparently y'all want to see behind the scenes stuff because that's what's working best. So here's a video of me in the studio kind of thing. And I do think a lot of people, especially because music in the past has been so much about the mystique, like the 80s, it was, you don't know whether or not these like wild bands are actually doing what is being said, you know, and that was the mystique. And now it's, people are like, okay, for me to be interested, I want to know what's under the hood. Like, I don't want the mystique. I want to know, and I want to see it.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. Really dive in.
So yeah, it's really fascinating how much it's pivoted, and I'm curious as to how that evolves, because it's going to get to a certain point where you can't get any more personal, you know? So I'm really curious to see if there's some sort of loop where it goes back, because we're seeing like the spike of vinyl again.
Yeah.
And because I think some people are yearning more for, okay, everything is digital now. I want something concrete. And it's like, now they're way more expensive than ever before, you know? So I'm really curious. I have no idea. But it is interesting to see, like, how that's happening. I don't see it pivoting anytime soon. I think it's going to be, you know, continue to develop content. Content's king and all that stuff.
Right. But, no, that's a good point, though. Like, how do we get any more personal? Like, I saw some YouTuber, like, film his, like, child's birth, you know, like, and he puts that up. I'm like, I don't want, like, all, I mean, I guess that's like intimacy between these this man and his fans, but like, I would not be having a camera in there, and let alone broadcasting it to like hundreds of thousands of people or whatever. That is, I'm surprised the wife was down.
Like, I know. I remember seeing the article, and I was like, A, I'm not gonna click on the video, and B, yeah, I would be pissed.
Like, yeah. Oh my god.
But and apparently Offset just did something similar. He, for his rollout of his new album, he posted a video of Cardi B giving birth. So same thing. And it's just like, why? Anywho, we can move back to the music instead of birth videos.
Yeah. Good call. a little segue there.
But, yeah. So I guess one thing I want to, dive into is you got this rollout. What should people expect, you know, coming forward for this year? And how can they engage?
Yeah, that's like, I'm really glad you asked that, because I was going to kind of talk about like the nurturing of your audience a little bit more. And something that I was so focused on like this planning this launch and like learning how to use like the paid media, which is a great tool. It's like a great way to get people into your ecosystem so you don't have to rely on social media platforms all the time. But you can't like neglect it either, right? Like it's so important to be on those as well and like active. And so what I'm trying to do now is like kind of become a part of these people's lives like more regularly and give them something that they can expect. So like something that how that like ends up playing out in how I'm messaging is like regular emails to the people who sign up and basically like giving them like an introduction sequence of like, here's what you're going to get from being on my email list. Like I do this thing called Mini Cover Mondays, and I just do like a minute or a minute and a half of whatever song I want to cover that week. Been taking suggestions from people and trying to engage them that way. But my goal is to like not miss it at all, like for the next at least a year, you know, and just keep going on it. Because I think when you have like a recurring series like that, like the podcast, you know, people are going to expect something. And it's like, oh, great, you know, like it's Monday. Like let's take this minute or two to go watch that cover that I've learned to expect, you know, on Mondays. And I also want to do more like live streaming.
Nice.
Just for like performances. And I think I'm going to start maybe doing that on like Thursdays or Fridays, where you just like invite people to come hang out, like suggest some songs. And like, I think that yields a lot of benefits. Like one, people can expect that. And it also keeps your performance chops sharp, because you're doing something every week, learning new songs and stuff, keeping it interesting. And then you can feed that back into your like, say you're emailing your list every week. Like, that's a great way to, like, keep them interested every week. You have something new to show them all the time. And it's, like, amazing. Like, I'm a part of this Facebook group, which is actually, like, where I get a lot of these, like, marketing strategy ideas. It's called Indiepreneur. Like, nice. Entrepreneur, independent, whatever. And, like, I, like, have to give them so much credit, because, like, I feel like I would be, like, lost in the dark if I didn't have, like, a lot of people trying these things and, like, being able to learn and iterate off what they're doing. But like essentially where I was going with that is like there's people in that group who have like done weekly live streams for like years. And like one of the examples was this guy who's like, I can't remember the name right now, but he's like a Christian musician, and he does like Sunday live streams. And like he's making offers to people like in his, you know, amongst the live stream, and people like know and expect to come like hang out with this guy on Sunday. Like, and they're so engaged. They're like, you know, I need some prayers. Like my, you know, mom is sick this week, like, and it's crazy. Like, there's a community there. So I guess actually like letting people know that they can expect like that sense of community and like is like a focus for the next year, and just kind of trying to crush it, you know. It's got to be a big year for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough but like thrilling task, you know what I mean? And I see also, and there's a lot more resources for artists to support that. Like, I see Patreon is really taken off. I remember hearing about it back when I was in college, and Peter Hollins went to the University of Oregon, and he was one of like the first guys that was on it. And it was like, the idea to me was kind of crazy. He was like, yeah, people pay me for every video I release.
Yeah.
And like from $1 to like $100. And so if I release a video, it automatically deposits a payment to me. And I was like, that's insane. And now he's making a living off that. And I know Katie Cuffle locally here, she's like a blues musician.
Mm.
And she just started hers. And it's that same thing. She's literally like writing new songs and trying to post new songs like all the time. And she's like, if you're one of my patrons, you're going to get, you know, one of these things. And then live streaming, like there's so many different avenues now.
Yeah.
And really it is like following tech too. I feel like Amazon owns Twitch and they're pumping money into that platform. Right. And so like you said, like using these live streaming, Facebook's got their version, Instagram, Twitter had Periscope. I don't know if that's still a big thing or not, but
I think it's a thing. I don't know.
If it's a thing. Yeah. But yeah, it's really fascinating how it's kind of opening up. You know what I mean? And jumping on it early, I think, is important, too, because if you think about, like, YouTube, the first people to get to – there's, like, that first mover advantage of those who got to YouTube early benefited, and now it's, like, there's so many people there. It's, like, how are you going to start now, you know?
Yeah, that's so true. But I think, like – I also think, like, if you're consistent, like, you won't – like, you definitely don't get, like, the first mover advantage anymore or whatever. But, like, if you're consistent, like, I think there still is, like, a piece of the pie for most people, like – like your music is going to be new to somebody, right? You know, like, so I think like there are room for like a lot of players, but it can almost be like overwhelming at sometimes too. Cause it's like, it's not just like about the music anymore. It's like, you have to become an entrepreneur. Like you have to become a marketer. You have to run your business, you know, and that can't be emphasized like enough. And sometimes musicians aren't like the most like organized of people. Like, you're not that way at all. You're like extremely on top of things and like consistent with your social media. Like it's crazy. Like you're super dedicated, but I think that's something that people need to pick up on and like realize that they may be spending like, a large chunk of their time doing these other things, you know, like jumping on the live stream, like getting into video editing and trying like a vlog. That's something I want to get into as well, but my chops just aren't there. And like, my lighting's always whack, but the point is like, don't make excuses. Like we were talking earlier, like, you know, some of these podcasts with millions of followers and like the audio sounds like they're in a wind tunnel, like you were saying, like they're still doing it. You know, they were consistent and that's, you know, that's what matters.
Yeah. And like you said, you're going to be new to someone and you can learn along the way. It's like, you might as well just fail fast and get, cause some people will enjoy that. They'll be like, I remember when they were doing it, like the podcast in the basement and it sounded terrible. And now look where they are. Like people enjoy, I think, that growth aspect too, of seeing something improve.
Definitely, dude. Yeah, like, it's cool to, like, watch somebody change and, like, just be putting themselves out there. Like, unless you're, like, a Facebook troll or something. Like,
yeah.
And, like, you just don't like anything. Like, yeah. Oh, man.
Cool.
Have you gotten any, like, hatred on anything that you've ran before?
Yeah.
I don't have to go too into it, but that's just funny to me.
I've had some people. I saw, yeah, one guy was like, I've seen this ad before. It was like, it was literally just like my EP rollout and it had been out for like 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And he commented, was like, I've already seen this. Like, stop showing me this. I'm like, hey, look, like you can turn off. You can say like, don't want to see this video again. And he just started going. And then I had some people that would just like, I just laugh at some of it because some of it's funny. And then Aaron jumped on and actually started trolling with the guy. It was like my song Hurt Like Me. And he was like spelling out, because I it's kind of a funny like bluesy pronunciation. I bent the vowels a little bit.
Right.
So some guy was like going off about that. And then Aaron just jumped on and started spelling things wrong. And like it spiraled. But then it just became funny to where like I didn't think anything of it. Because obviously like especially with the internet, you're not going to please everybody. And probably most people.
Yeah.
Because some people just want to be mad and be nasty. And it's like, I don't really have time for that. But have you experienced that as
definitely.
Well?
Yeah. And like especially when you're running ads on stuff like, you're not going to hit the mark every single time. And so, like, a lot of people were on the latest video that I ran a bunch of traffic on, which is, like, a live performance of New Perspective. And it's, like, I'm playing a bunch of instruments, so there's, like, 9 of my faces on screen at one point or something like that. It's silly. But anyways, like, some people would really dig into, like, they thought it was, like, auto-tune. Like, somebody's, like, this is an auto-tuned joke. And
my God.
I'm, like, dude, like, I didn't even, like, I barely mixed this, you know,
yeah.
Like it's not, there's no auto-tune, like it's all me. And I like occasionally will try to like flip it, you know, if I see like, cause occasionally someone says something that's like a little bit on the edge. Like someone was like, I always like joke that I look like Ellen DeGeneres or something. And like somebody was like, I didn't know like Ellen could sing or something like that. And I was like, I just made some sort of comment like, yeah, you usually know me for my dancing or whatever, you know, whatever it is. Like, and like that person was like, but like all jokes aside, you know, like they yeah, totally flipped. They're like, this is great. Like, you yeah. know, and like they end up following me on Instagram or something. So like there's moments where if you respond to it in like a funny, for me, like usually it's like, I'm just racking on myself a little bit.
Self-deprecation is the way to go.
It is, those. Yeah. How can they, you know?
It's the 8 mile approach.
Yeah.
If you just diss yourself and then like, crap, they took away all of my ammo.
Exactly.
And then
yeah.
they're like, I forget who it was. There was some guy, and it was really extreme. It was like a comedian, and he's from the Middle East, and someone was just saying really awful things, and he just direct messaged him on Twitter, didn't address the nastiness. Like, hey man, like. And he just complimented them on like their face, like their profile picture, or whatever. And kind of like that, people would pivot it. And that was like an extreme example.
Yeah.
But he just like showed them love. And all of a sudden it was like, hey, like, I'm really sorry. Like, I'm not normally like this. Like, I've had a bad, like, et cetera. And then he had like these nice conversations with people. And it was crazy, like, how the human psyche is just weird, especially with the internet. People are like, I'm going to say this really nasty thing. And then it's like, oh, you saw it? Oh, you actually reacted? Well.
It's like, there's a person, like, reading this?
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty amazing now that they were able to turn that around.
Yeah, it was so extreme. But I remember being like, wow, if he can do that, like, I can't get mad about somebody being like, your voice, you said this word weird. I'm like, okay, I can't be upset about this now. Like, you know?
Worse things have been said.
Yeah, much worse things. But it is a weird thing to navigate, though.
Yeah, dude, the hatred, it's odd.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's good. And you get over it, like you said, like you're developing thicker skin, and like, it's nice when you can maybe feel like, there's always like a little bit of that weariness of, you know, you're going to be vulnerable when you're putting yourself out there like this. But I think like cutting back on that is like a really good lesson to learn. Or even if you feel it, just being like, whatever, like, this is the job, you know, like,
right.
I'm going to have to be vulnerable, like, all the time, you know?
Like, yeah.
And some people are, you know, they really own that, and that's cool to see.
Yeah. It is a weird thing to navigate, but on that note, I'm going to throw some rapid fire questions at you.
Hit me.
I need a segment name. Still don't have one.
Okay.
Rapid fire questions, but just preferences. And I'm going to give you two things, and you just got to tell me which one.
Okay.
And so I didn't give you the heads up on this on purpose. But you sent me kind of some of your preferences musically, and I'm going to make you choose.
Okay.
So, Daft Punk or Wolfpack?
Daft Punk.
Justin Timberlake or the Neptunes?
Neptunes.
Tom Misch or Jordan Rakai?
Oh, damn. That's hard. Probably Jordan Rakai.
Nice.
Yeah.
Soul or jazz?
Soul.
And then if you're trying to get inspiration for a song, would you rather walk the city or walk a rural area?
Oh, I think I'm about the city, man. I love nature, but the ideas always pop up if you're by yourself.
That's very true. And then would you rather start writing to a chord progression or a riff?
Chord progression.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, it's been awesome having you. Have a couple more questions. We got through the rapid fire stuff, and now we're going to dive a little bit deeper and more almost spiritual in a way.
Let's do it.
So what do you think like sets your music apart?
That's tough. I mean, yeah, it's like, that's something you should definitely be able to articulate. I think it's like we were talking about though. It's just like taking all these influences and like, I mean, anybody could say this, but like making them your own, you know, like nobody listens to exactly how, you know, how I listen to music or has the same set of influences or whatever experiences I've had. And I think just like between, you know, like what we've been talking about, like the jazz influence and picking up jazz guitar at like a young age and learning all about like fun chords and like diving into like nerding out on harmony and, you know, doing crazy things like modal interchange or something. You know, it's just like I really care about like putting together the best songs possible and like always learning about my craft. And I think I'd like to think that like comes through and like, and it ends up in like a nice, like user friendly or listener friendly, like song. Like I'm not trying to like be too heady or like ostracize some people from being able to enjoy it. So I think it's something that like is easy, you know, easy going. It, I don't want to say easy listening because that's a genre I don't want to be associated with, but it's just like, it's something that like you can throw on and just like kick it to and hang out. And it's not like your pregame party music, but it's just something, you know, laid back. It makes you feel relaxed, I'd like to think.
Yeah. And I guess real quick, something we didn't really talk about a whole lot is, like, we talked kind of about how this EP came together and whatnot, but, like, what's your, like, in an ideal world, or maybe moving forward, what's your writing process? You kind of mentioned you prefer a chord progression versus a riff, but what's kind of your typical workflow as far as, like, writing a song?
Well, I know that for me, I always do lyrics last, which is, you know, not everybody works that way, but I usually start with, like, either I get, like, a full idea in my head, and then I, like, kind of race and just, like, try to get as much of that done as possible.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll, like, sing some, like, scratch vocals and just, like, get instruments that are close to whatever's going on up there. And sometimes, like, those demo vocals will, like, stick around. But that's, like, one approach is, like, the flurried, like, you know, maybe I'm singing into, like, my phone or something. You know, musician, that's a go-to tool, right?
It's yes. Just,
like, I, like, hope people don't think I'm weird on the street, but, like, like, but I am singing into my phone. And this is going to be dope. Just wait. Like, so there's, like, that, like, flurried approach. But then sometimes I'm just, like, practicing some scales or something. And, like, part of what I do when I'm practicing scales is I let myself just, like, riff around on them as well. And sometimes that's, like, the start of a song. Like, I was just playing, like, a... what was it? The fifth mode. I can't remember the name right now. I'm screwing up. It's the one you play over, like, dominant seven chords, essentially. Oh, nice. I got the scales and modes for a guitar. But I'm really not.
I'm bad when it comes to that stuff, too. I'm like, most of the stuff I write is in just some sort of minor key anyways. It's like some blues progression. So,
dude, this is perfect for you, then. It's the Mixolydian. That's, like, yeah. That's the bluesy one.
Yep.
So I was, like, just messing around on that, and that, you know, I let myself go into, like, the more free-form, like, just play the notes, but don't be, like, worried about playing a scale.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, ideas come out that way, too.
Totally.
Or just, like, strumming around on the guitar, and I also have this, like, mini synthesizer that's called the OP-1, which is a great, like, I call it, like, my musical, like, sketchbook, almost.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause the sounds are kind of goofy. Like, a lot of the times, if I try to make a song just from that, it would maybe sound more like a video game music or something like that.
Right.
But it's great for, like, if I'm on the train coming home from work, I just, like, will get some ideas down that way. And then if the chords are cool, I, like, take that and I play it on guitar and, like, actually get, like, a proper, like, session going. But that's just something that I let myself just sketch, you know. It's I'm not trying to judge it. I'm just having fun.
Yeah.
So I think between all those, there's a flurry of ways it can happen, but then I sit down and start actually producing and mixing. And, yeah, like I said, the last thing I do, obviously, before, like, the mixing is write the lyrics.
Mm-hmm. Right now. Very cool. So on that, kind of segue into the next one, if you had to do a different genre from what you do now, what would you do?
I think it would be really fun to do, like, a really, like, dance-oriented project. Like,
yeah,
something that was, like, made for the clubs. Like, I like deep house a lot. Like, are you familiar with Disclosure?
Yeah.
I, like, had a big Disclosure phase, like, my freshman year of college. Like, I loved that music. Like, and it's just super fun. So maybe something like that would be fun to do.
Nice. And so why do you make music?
I think, like, it's like, it almost, like you were saying, it's, like, almost like a spiritual, like, healing kind of thing. Like, just the fact that I wasn't always very, like, forward with my emotions, and, like, the fact that I could, like, go somewhere and, like, express things that maybe I didn't want to say to somebody else, or just, like, almost, like, relax in a very, like, tranquil space, like, just getting on your guitar and playing some chords that you love. Like, there's very few things that, like, make you just feel like you're not worried about anything else. You know, like, if you catch yourself just, like, really enjoying what you're doing like that, that's, like, something that you know you have to keep doing. And music has, like, always been something like that for me. Even if you get caught up in the whole, like, trying to, like, be successful and, like, turn this into a business, like, you got to come back to just, like, the enjoyment at the end of the day, and, like, the de-stressor of it all. Like, it's really nice.
Yeah, I agree. That's when all the best stuff comes out, is, like, when you just, like, have fun with it, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, dang, I just wrote a dope song.
Yeah.
So on the flip side, what do you hope other people get out of your music, or, like, the whole experience that you're providing for them?
I'd like to think, like, it was, like, kind of what I was saying with the why, or what's different about my music. Like, I do want it to be, like, a place where people can, one, either just, like the instrumental and the vocals and like really relax to it, and just kind of have like that like 3-4 minutes of like some peace in their day. Or like I also try to tell like stories or like get have like an emotional thing you can connect to in the lyrics as well. Like I care about what I'm writing there. So if like that's what somebody's jam is to be like more introspective, like I want that to be something that they can tap into as well. But also like whatever you get from it is cool. You know, like sometimes it's hard to articulate that as to why you like something. So if it's something other than that, and I'm sure like as I'm getting feedback from people, I'll start to hear. I've been hearing summery a lot. People are always like, it's a summery, man. Like, it's good. Like, we need some sunshine up here. Like,
yeah.
Summery music. Felt like summer. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, that works for me.
Yeah. That's why I thought your band name, The Coastals, was so perfect. Because I definitely do get that vibe from you guys, especially with all, like, the harmonies and some of those cleaner, like, bright tones. Mm-hmm. I definitely, definitely feel that. Got to get some peer gigs.
Yeah, there we go.
Cool, man. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the podcast. I'm really excited for everyone to hear this EP. And I guess before we close this out, do you have details on upcoming shows or places that people can go, I guess, one more time where they can find your EP rollout?
Yeah, go to easy.evandv.com/experienceeasy. And it's spelled out phonetically like DEEVEE for the Evan DV. And that I'm launching that on March 4th, and you can get all the tunes and see all the behind the scenes and hear really what went into this from a behind the scenes kind of perspective. And then I'm also on Instagram, Facebook, whatever, at EvanDV across the board.
Sweet. Great branding.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. Again, thanks so much, man. I'm super excited, and be sure to push all this stuff when the podcast comes out.
Thanks for having me, dude. Yeah, this was great.
My pleasure.
That was Downtown by Evan DeVries off his upcoming EP Easy, which is out everywhere March 4th. He's also playing a show with his band The Coastals at Tim's Tavern March 2nd with yours truly. Also, be sure to check out the Spotify playlist for this week's episode. Each interview gets a curated playlist comprised of the songs and artists discussed that week. And if you've enjoyed what you've heard, please remember to rate Made for Music on iTunes. Thank you so much, and see you next time.